Welcome back. This is 928. I'm Daniel Crocker, and this evening we're looking back on the Schultz, Hardy, and Eagle Rock fires, and we're talking about longstanding efforts to restore our forests to something closer to their natural state, to do thinning, prescribe burning across the landscape, both to restore health to those forest ecosystems, but also try to prevent future catastrophic wildfires. If you want to join our conversation, we do have lines open. The phone number to call is 800-523-5628. Let's go to Chris, who is on the line from Flagstaff. Chris, thanks a lot for your patience. Maybe Chris ran out of patience there. Chris, are you there? Looks like we lost Chris. 800-523-5628, the phone number to call. 523-5628. We did have a question that was emailed in earlier today by Tom Bean here in Flagstaff. And Tom wanted to know how it's determined what areas get what treatments when it comes to thinning, because he's noticed around his home along Lake Mary Road that some thinnings look a lot more aggressive than other thinnings. So anyone want to take on that question? Henry Provincio with the Forest Service.
Sure, I could take that. Tom's question is really a matter of the urban interface and the fire threat to urban interface. Basically, what we've been doing over the past 10 years is focusing our efforts on that urban interface where the community meets the forest. We tended to have more aggressive treatments immediately adjacent to those private homes, and that would provide firefighters with greater safety and a greater probability that we would actually be able to save that private property and do it safely by reducing firefighter risk. Tom had sent a couple pictures along, and some of the pictures he shows, I believe, are what we call pre-commercial thinning, where we go in and we just focus hand thinning efforts on the smaller size class trees. Typically, that'll be followed up by commercial thinning or even preceded with commercial thinning in an effort to kind of change the fire behavior.
I want to go to Bob, who's calling from Snowflake. Bob, thanks a lot for joining us. You're on the air.
Sure.
Go ahead, please.
Well, the one thing I wanted to comment with, especially with walleye coverage there, is that if anyone wants to see an example of the thinning processes that have helped to make a more healthy forest, is you need to look at the White Mountain Apaches. When Ben Levomsa was there with the AA, he went into an aggressive thinning project using the formulas that set aside or set out by the Flagstaff Center for they had done a textbook job, I think, of those park land service really creates a really healthy forest, not only in the woods, but also in the
Bob, we're losing you there, but Wally Covington, are you familiar what he's talking about, efforts on the White Mountain Apache Reservation?
Yes. The White Mountain Apache tribe actually has been a leader in the use of fire and in restoration since the 1940s, when it was unpopular throughout most of the West. So they've had, until the late 70s, they had one of the exemplary prescribed burning programs that, as a matter of fact, we had a meeting over there in 1977 where people from all over the world came to see how they were doing their prescribed burning. And much of the area in the Rodeo Chedeschi fire was thinned very effectively before that fire burned. And in many circumstances, those stands did hold up to the fire front or brought the fire to the ground. Of course, the problem was that there was enough spotting, enough dynamic fire behavior that it get on the other side of those stands and burn on. So we do have some very good examples around Arizona of restoration treatments in forest that look very good. We have some that are kind of so-so as well. In restoration, one of the things I just wanted to add in is that when we talk about restoration, it's not just about fire behavior. We're also very much interested in restoring wetlands in riparian areas. That's one thing that when you get to a large enough area like we're trying to do with the four fry, you can look at comprehensive restoration, not just changing fire behavior, but also restoring springs and seeps and healthy watershed function. And when we were talking about Tom Bean's question before, there are some areas in the backcountry where you need to remove just about all the trees because the trees have invaded a grassland or a wetland. And in those circumstances, it can be quite startling to look at them right after treatment. Sometimes I like to use the analogy of going in to visit someone right after open heart surgery. And you get most people, when you look at them after surgery, they look much worse than they did before surgery. It takes some time for these to recover over time. But that's really the successful way to restore health, is you don't just bury your hand in the sand, head in the sand. You don't just turn your eyes away from it. You have to look at it and say, what do we need to do to get these ecosystems into a healthy shape?
Do you think that stark nature, I mean, just on a, just by, if folks look at an area right after it was thinned, and as you described, it can look pretty aggressive. Do you think that has hindered efforts to do restoration around Flagstaff? Henry Provincia.
Yeah, you know, I would think that people's reality is what they see out their back door or as they're driving down the highway. And for the most part, folks don't realize that these forests are in an unhealthy state. So when you do see these things immediately after a thinning, it is quite stark. It is a bit startling. But I would say within 5 years, you begin to see the healing process take over. And I believe it's a much more favorable or much more appealing condition.
800-523-5628 is the phone number to call to join our conversation. 523-5628 if you are in Flagstaff. Let's go to Aaron, who's on the line from Sedona. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my question has to do with a couple of earlier callers. One was to do with the age of the forest and 100 to 400-year-old trees, and I'm just wondering about another caller's question to do with global warming. If we're worried about global warming and its 100-year consequences, why are we worried about 400-year-old trees? I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Aaron, you know, one of the things about these old-growth trees, which are, you know, say 200 to 400 years old, is that they do have a capacity to deal with climate change, with drought, when there's not so much competition around them. So, you know, one of the early experiments that we've done here around Flagstaff is looking at thinning and burning in old growth stands, removing the excess trees that had come in since fire exclusion began. And it was stunning how fast the old trees, even the 400-year-old trees, responded to those treatments. As my colleague Mike Wagner, who's a forest health specialist over at the School of Forestry at NAU, says, is that they started growing like teenagers. And that really is it. You know, that all of a sudden they, when they were on death's doorstep, they change over into a much more healthy physiology and start growing at a substantial rate. They start being able to produce pitch to resist bark beetle infestation and so on. So the old trees, if they are thinned out and if we get these ecosystems into a healthy state, can continue to survive in these ecosystems, even in the presence of global warming.
Let's go to Rob, who's been patient on the line. Rob, thanks for joining us. Hi, Rob, you still there? Rob was on I-40, so I think we may have lost Rob. Let's go to another caller on the phone. Hi, you're on the air, and let us know your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is TD, and I'm calling from Page.
Hi, TD, thanks for joining us. You have a comment or a question?
My question, I was listening to, you know, a possible resolve would be to bring a contractor in to recover some of this wood for other purposes. And one that you mentioned was pellets, wood stoves. How much resistance from the, and how would you deal with the resistance from the environmental community over running chainsaws and disturbing the spotted owls? And I mean, this is a necessary project. We're going to do this. How would the Forest Service deal with the environmental community resisting that type of operation?
Well, I'll throw this to Ethan Amack first with the Grand Canyon Trust. Ethan, what is the relationship between the industry and groups such as yours now?
Sure, and thanks for the question, TD. The story is different now than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. The environmental community overall has been an active participant in forest restoration discussions. There's been an evolution on many people's parts, including those within the environmental community, about forest restoration over the last 10 to 20 years and beyond. And right now, again, the environmental community is actively involved in discussions about landscape scale restoration. So I think it's fair to say that the environmental community is a strong supporter of landscape scale restoration, is at the table really pushing as hard as they can for responsible restoration at very broad scales. So there is a lot of diversity within that community. But I think the key groups in the Southwest are at the table and working actively to support this this effort. So I don't think I don't think folks are going to see the kind of resistance they might have experienced in the past, even with such a large scale project. This is a very collaborative project. Everybody's committed to being at the table, and I think it'll remain so.
We got an email from Jody Henry with the Coconino National Forest. This is a good question for you. She wants to know if the forest is considering lowering the CRE threshold for instituting campfire restrictions. Do you know anything about? I mean, first of all, what is the CRE threshold? Is that how the Forest Service determines when to implement restrictions?
I think what she's referring to is ERC,
okay,
energy release component,
right?
The Forest Service has a very specific way that they go about determining whether fire restrictions are appropriate. They base it on science and they base it on available resources. However, they are always willing to look at new ways or new ideas or even adjustments on when and how they implement fire restrictions. So that's not beyond the realm of consideration.
Of possibly looking at how those determinations are made, taking a closer look.
Right, right.
Yeah, of course, one of the major source of fires is lightning strikes. And you can't close the forest to lightning strikes. I wish we could. But we live here in the Southwest and here around the San Francisco Peaks in an area that has the highest lightning frequency of any place in the coterminous United States, except for some areas in southern Florida. So these, fires are going to occur. It's excluding campfires is sort of a holding pattern until we get these forests into a condition where fires are just burning naturally through the understory. At that point, forest closures are going to be a thing of the past, literally.
I'm afraid that's going to have to be the last word for our show this evening. I'd like to thank our panelists, Wally Covington with the Ecological Restoration Institute at Northern Arizona University, Ethan Amack with the Grand Canyon Trust, Henry Provincia with the Coconino National Forest. Gentlemen, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Dan.
And thanks to everyone who joined our conversation. If you want to hear any of the stories that we've aired over the past several days on the wildfires that have burned across Northern Arizona, on how forest restoration, how thinning helps slow the Hardy Fire, about the Four Forest Restoration Initiative, go to our website, knau.org. I'd like to thank Brian Sanders, who engineered tonight's program, along with John Meyer. Also thanks to Kate Seabury, who handled the phones for us this evening. I'm Daniel Crocker. Thanks for joining us tonight. Good evening.
It's 6:59. You're listening to KNAU, Arizona Public Radio. Performance today is coming up on our classical music station and an encore broadcast of Marketplace on our news and talk stations. Funding for KNAU comes from our listeners and from It's About Coffee, local high-precision coffee roaster and the Factory Restaurant and Coffee House. Kobe Burger, steak, and seafood entrees include beverage, potato, and salad on North Steves in East Flagstaff. It'sAboutCoffee.com. We're Arizona Public Radio, a service of Northern Arizona University. KNAU KPUB Flagstaff, KNAA Sholo, KNAD Page, KNAG Grand Canyon, and KNAQ Prescott. You can listen to us anytime online at KNAU.org. I'm Ann Crosman. Thanks for joining us this evening. It's 7 o'clock.